Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
Hey, and I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for...
A million, 40 million people, Unspun.
Million
people
in Canada.
Congratulations, we did it.
You know what's wild is that we hit the 40 million mark 6 months ago.
Yeah, we're growing. And, you know, if, mostly through immigration, we have 300 to 500,000 new immigrants coming to Canada. That's, you know, we're one of the most open countries, Western industrialized countries in the world, unlike America, who's trying to push people back into Mexico, as opposed to coming out with better immigration policies. But headaches and problems with immigration and growth, right? Here in the, you know, we talk a lot about this on the show. It doesn't come without its headaches, growth.
No. As the daughter of an immigrant, I'm going to be very grateful for the immigration programs in this country. I love a melting pot. I love the diversity that is our country. What I struggle with is having not enough infrastructure, because I was going to just say housing, and then I went, no, healthcare. There's... Like, where do we even begin with the struggle? I mean, housing is for real. That undeniable piece of this. Like, we don't have enough space to house the people who are currently here. It's a crisis. Mm-hmm. And yet the doors are open with a promise of a better life for those coming here, migrating here, or claiming refugee status from places that are terrible, that they're fleeing.
Yeah.
And they come here and they can't find a place to live.
And we still have people fighting on the supply and demand concept, you know, that we don't need to build more housing. You're like literally look at the numbers, 500,000 people, 41 million people in Canada. There was a million less a year ago. We're not building that much enough. And on all levels of housing, not just, you know, high-end, social, all the levels of housing need to be built. Because some of these people who are coming here are wealthy, some are poor, some are all, they're all over the map, just like all of us are all over the map. So we need to build all kinds of housing. And then we also have to think about our healthcare system, which was already strained. There was some good news this last couple of weeks about doctors in BC, and that we're in fact, they kind of seem to be getting a handle on that because of the changes we made to the pharmacies and to how doctors get paid and all that stuff. So that's good news.
Yeah.
You know, that there is some flexibility and we're leading the way as in Canada on that. But, you know, you look at the downtown east side, you look at this OPS, so you look at what's happening in Nanaimo, all these things we'll talk about, but there's stuff.
Let's start, well, hold
it's
on,
all
but,
about growth.
With, like, it is all about growth and growing in the right way, because when we're seeing emergency rooms in the interior of BC or in northern BC regularly closing due to staffing issues, and yet more people are moving into those areas because it's more affordable to live there, but you can't, the emergency room can't be an hour and a half drive away. Like that's not realistic. I think it's Rupert. I think the Prince Rupert emergency room closed this past weekend for the 10th time in the last number of months. This isn't just like, oh, whoops. It's like,
you know, emergencies happen every day.
Every day. And what would, you know, if you're sitting in your cozy chair, if we're sitting in our cozy spaces right now going, well, we don't have, you know, right now.
I don't have an emergency. Yeah. But you've,
when you
you've,
need
you've
it.
Gone through it with you and your family. And yes. If anybody's dealt with the emergency system, it's, you know, minutes make a difference. You know, my dad died of a heart attack. It was, you know, if he'd gotten there, you know, partly his fault, but, you know, there were, the system was there for him quickly.
Yeah.
He lived a bit longer, but not long enough. But, you know, there you have that kind of stuff happen. You need it. You want assistance immediately.
Yeah.
And they also now, we're closed today.
What? Right. Sorry, we're closed today because the staff is so exhausted, under-supported, underpaid. I mean, what are we doing in a world where there are hundreds and hundreds of billionaires and we can't pay nurses and streamline things for physicians or teachers? We could jump off in so many ways with schools. Where do you put the growing population when we're downsizing schools and not building associated with the,
you know,
let's go back to healthcare real quick.
You know, one thing we've talked a lot about is trying to take the politics out of decision making on certain aspects, right? On inflationary adjustments to things that are required by government to provide. You should not be making this political. You know, healthcare, you know, housing. These things should be tied to the rate of inflation and the growth projections that we know are coming. Schooling. They don't build schools until they see the whites of the kids' eyes in the neighborhood. It's ridiculous. My kids didn't have a school in Yale Town. We even know that there were kids going, where's their school? We're going to build that eventually. Well, the kids are here. Let's build it.
Right. Well, it's kind of like being promised $10 a day childcare. I heard $10 a day childcare for the first time when I actually had a child who needed daycare. And guess how much my care was when I had to work, you know, outside of regular business hours, when I was working at breakfast television, it wasn't $10 a day. It was $10 an hour.
Yeah.
$10 an hour to be a single mother. It was almost cost prohibitive for me to work. And when people are like debating, well, how much is it going to cost to have childcare? How much does it cost to not have nurses? Mm-hmm. And not to be gender specific, but historically, nurses have been predominantly women, or mm-hmm. lab techs, or, you know, whatever. The doers in the workforce have often been women. And if you can get more women into the workforce, there is more taxes paid that comes back around to pay for the childcare for more women. I heard on actually the Mike Smith show today, they were discussing $10 a day childcare. And there was I believe it was Jennifer Whiteside who was on, who is in charge of that file, and was like, listen, you know, no, it wasn't Jennifer Whiteside. Sorry. I can't remember who it was, a woman talking about women and childcare, but mm-hmm. really astutely pointed out that the money, the $1.9 billion in the BC government's hands right now, allocated for childcare, is not being spent because the decision hasn't been made how to best spend it. The money, it's not even a matter of we need to put our hand in the taxpayer's pocket to get the money. We have the money. We're just not doing it because we've been promising it. It's been promised, but the British Columbians mm-hmm. have been promised this for, well, at least 14 years, because my kid's 16 and I sure could have used that daycare when he was 3.
We approved so many, and they continue to approve so many daycare spaces as part of construction projects, right? But nobody wants to operate them because nobody can afford them, and you can't find staff because you can't pay them enough to do the work. Yeah. This is the ultimate dilemma, you know, okay, you know, this, I don't know if it's a chicken and egg or catch 22 or whatever we're calling this, because, you know, each level of government's trying to do one thing or another, but they're not connecting, and there's this disconnect. In fact, there's units available. They're literally sitting empty in this city of Vancouver, ready for daycares. There's one right on Richard Street where I live, Richards and Helmkin. It's a daycare built for that we approved at the corner of Helmkin and Richards, sitting empty because nobody wants to run it. And if you go to Yale Town in that park, it's kids everywhere.
Yeah.
But nobody can afford to probably pay the taxes on that space, as well as finding staff. And it's an expensive endeavor. And so the $10 daycare is, sure, that's great for us, but it's also a challenge right now to find staff and train them who want to be doing this. And then running a daycare business, the liability insurance, all this kind of stuff, it's very, very risky business and expensive.
And it's difficult. It's difficult. You think especially it's hard being a parent. Try having 30 of them every day in an unstructured
situation. I
wouldn't
want to be my daycare teacher, I'll tell you that.
Right. So I will say one more thing, because it kind of ties into daycare. The new building approved for right across from VGH. You're bringing me around on towers. I'm going to say this. I know. Well, right. How many hundreds? Almost 300 episodes in. And I finally get it, because I saw the mock-up for this tower across the street from VGH, which has two levels of 24-hour daycare built into the structure, which makes so much sense.
Or guess who? Hospital workers, right? 24/7. I had two sisters. Two of my sisters were nurses and had kids, and it was tough. Shift work is tough when you got kids. And they were both single moms.
My mom, single mom, lab technician, Lionsgate Hospital. She worked shifts at Lionsgate Hospital round the clock. She had to do what she had to do. When someone didn't show up, she couldn't leave. She had to keep going. And she had two small children at home in a time where daycare wasn't a thing, where live-in nannies were something that happened in Disney movies. You know, that was a Mary Poppins thing. It didn't actually happen. We lived in a co-op in North Van. Like, there, it, it's something. And so I celebrate.
Yeah.
And I understand now what you were talking about. Because, yeah, I would love to see some gentle density in there and maybe just like a little park. And whatever. No. We
not need on that location.
We need. Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Broadway is the second biggest business district, employment district in the province, next to downtown Vancouver. So, and the fact that we've been, I'm looking out the window. This is my office on Broadway in Ontario. It's a two-story walk-up. I'm paying the taxes of a six-story, but it really should be a 40-story on this site.
Yeah,
because nobody's going to care. Okay, sure, some houses up there might, but nobody below is going to care. You know, why are we delaying on this? If somebody wants to build it and put rental housing or just strata, I don't care. Just get some units built, get some other stuff below it, mixed use. Anyways, this is, but then we have crime and then we have other stuff that we have to
do. Well, let's talk about the OPS, the overdose prevention site that is now closing in Yaletown, in your neighborhood. That was a troublesome spot.
Yeah, right across from that park and where that daycare should be. Right there, right exactly there. Terrible location.
So it's moving.
Yeah.
It's closing. It's too small.
It's in a roaming truck now, driving around. It's ridiculous. Wow. So guess where they parked on their first day? Right in front of that old, it's the same location. They parked right in front of the location at Talbigan and Seymour. And so many people complain that they drove around the corner and went down an alley and parked there. It's the drug addict.
I mean, I understand you need to reach the people, right? Like the people that need the help, that want the help, that don't want to use a loan, that want to have a safe situation. They're, it's not like it's optional for them to use because there is the addiction part. Like I have empathy for that. I just struggle with why governments can't figure out how to apply the lessons that we've learned over decades to creating an environment and a resource, you know, that we've seen our friend Sarah Blythe has done on the downtown east side, like pushing a boulder uphill. You know, I've been to the downtown east side overdose prevention site. I've dropped off donations there. I've brought coffee and food and sandwiches and whatnot and water on a hot day and socks on a freezing cold day because these people are our community and they need our help. So that's a really important statement. It shouldn't be up to citizens to try and band-aid together situations. And it shouldn't just be plunked in a neighborhood across the street from a park, you know, with no supports and it becomes a chop shop out front. Like
We shouldn't be also ghettoizing it in the downtown east side either.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we've got that development. I've talked a lot about it up in Dunbar. Some people still complain about it, but it's about, I think it's 16 units up there of core need housing for people who have addictions. There are two units next to me built by a church group right next to my home. Sometimes there's some issues, but generally they're a pretty good neighbor. And if we have a challenge, we just go over and talk to the manager. Like, can you just like get this? They have very strict rules about if you no tolerance at all. But it's for people who have had drug addictions or alcohol addictions. One half of it's that. The other half is just regular social housing built by two of them. They're like about, I would think about 100 units between the two. And we never have issues with the people that live there. What we have issues is with people who are in these places that they're randomly wandering around. You've got this truck driving around now, like it's some kind of apocalyptical ice cream truck, you know, with its bell. Here, come and get your drug. Come do your drug. Ding, ling, 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 ling. Follow the truck and you find and inject your drugs into your arm. You know what is going on?
They're not distributing drugs like ice cream cones. To be clear, for somebody who might have made mistake there, it is for a safe injection vehicle. Because the messaging is with a tainted drug supply. Is to not use alone.
I know.
Because when like you go down.
But like an ice cream truck and just like that OPS.
I get you.
What happens is people are hanging around it and they're doing their thing. And they're doing, as you said, a chop shop. And so now we've got this roaming truck. It's just get it together. What are we doing here? And not to mention the fact that, okay, can we admit that the drug policies that we have loosened up is not working because we don't
decriminalization
have all the other stuff.
The title of that former mayor's book. This is the answer. I've solved it. It's like,
you can't do these things. We talk about this so much, Jody, about isolationism of policies. Without you do this, and then you know whack-a-mole. Okay, well, that now this is the problem. Okay.
And
now,
did you hear the latest unintended consequence of decrim is that nurses have been ringing the bell for forever, but now it's gone next level because within the rules, the healthcare guidelines, one, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, but a leaked memo of a patient using smoking meth in the hospital room mere minutes after a baby was born, right? And the right for them to do that, the right for them to consume their illicit drugs because they are no longer committing a crime by doing so. So the guidelines have now had to be restated and shifted to make it clear that you're allowed to bring a small amount of illicit drugs into the healthcare environment. However, then it had to be listed. You're not allowed to use if there's someone under the age of 19. You're not allowed to use if you're in a recovery. You're not allowed to use on a psychiatric ward. I'm like, am I living in the upside down? I mean, if we haven't already put our healthcare workers through enough.
Yeah.
Now we're telling them that, you know what, you can't actually say no to that person shooting up in the room while they're recovering from their broken ankle.
It's what? Insane. What? It's insane what is happening. The solutions have to be, you know, multi-level, multi-approach. You can't do one without the other. You can't build social housing for people in core need without staffing it with people who can manage that situation. You shouldn't be putting those kind of people in a seniors housing development like down in Olympic Village. You shouldn't be having a safe injection site across from a children's park. You should be having a safe injection site somewhere.
How did we get to the place where, oh, it'll be fine? You know, like right across from that, how many million dollar park that we've, you know, spent on to make a great place for kids to meet. Let's put that right across the street. And I'm not talking about being NIMBY. I'm talking about back in the planning piece. Because you go, you know, a couple of miles that way and everybody's losing their minds over the Arbutus and 8th development, right? That social housing, the big tower that was supposed to be 8 and then it's 14, then it's 17, then it's whatever. But it's kitty corner to a like elementary school. Like,
yeah,
like, well, really? There was no other place in the city to put
density
that.
Density should go there, but maybe not that kind of density.
Density, I'm all down. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, I understand the NIMBYs are going crazy for their reasons. What makes me crazy is this stuff doesn't happen without 9,000 layers of bureaucracy that happen first.
Or, you know, that unit, that place that where the OPS was on Seymour Street, built by the Wall Group, by Peter Wall. He built it for free, the building for free. It's social housing. So he could build it. He got extra density at his building at the corner of Drake and Richards. But he had to build that building first. But part of that development, and this was done during Sam Sullivan's policy that we had, where you had to put in also community group space. So originally, because I was there when we approved this building, it was meant to be for the LGBTQ community. They were going to use it as a facility. I forget what exactly it was for, a community facility. And so they were part of the process, the public hearing process. They were like, this is going to be great. It's going to be great. Then it got built and then they found out, oh my God, our taxes are going to be $5,000 a month. We can't afford, we don't even make $5,000 a month in revenue. We're a nonprofit. I think it just doesn't make sense. So they declined the space that they were
It was built for them.
It was free, but they couldn't afford the city's taxes because the city wouldn't waive the taxes.
Why would the city not waive the taxes?
It's not within our policy to do that. And the province actually is really strict about that kinds of stuff. You're not allowed to waive taxes. You can only provide grants to pay for the taxes. So you can't waive taxes, but you can, this is a provincial regulation. You have to find other ways to give money to those groups to pay those taxes. And so then the taxpayers are going, wait a minute, how come you're giving $50-100 million to all these groups suddenly? Well, we're not really. We're just waiving the taxes because we're paying their taxes. Well, wait a minute. It's $100 million, $50 million, $25 million, whatever it might be.
But you're not really waiving their taxes.
No. What would be great is if the province would say the taxpayers.
Yeah, you're dipping into the pocket again to create a quote unquote grant, which is more taxes to pay so that
Well, we don't. It's
so
as
much
far
of
as a
what's
portion of the taxation, it's such a minimal amount.
yeah.
What, but we put the city would have put the energy into the development of this building to create a space, but no other level of government's come to the table to help out with the other side. And so, because you're again, you're not working together on this, you got to put a plan together. Okay, we're going to build housing. Cities, you got to put the density together. Province, you got to build the building. Federal government, and you got to. You got to build, province, you got to pay the taxes. Federal government, you got to build a building, whatever. You got to work together and share the pain across all of the 41 million people that live in Canada.
41 million.
Only
Way
a
to bring
couple
it
have
around,
any
George
of
Affleck.
I know.
Way to bring it around. I want to, a little bit of breaking news that I didn't get a chance to tell you about when we were sitting down, because we basically just hit record today because we had so much to talk about.
Yes.
I was going back and forth with Sarah Daniels, my fabulous friend and colleague for many years, my former roommate. You remember her from television
Well,
and radio. Sarah Daniels is now a realtor and has been for quite some time. She's fantastic. She's my realtor, full disclosure, love her.
This
last
show
night
must
we
be
were
by
going back
Sarah
and,
Daniels.
yes, eye in the sky. She was texting with me last night. She's going to be on Steel and Vance tonight because she's just discovered, with all of this housing stuff and with the wanting to free up rental, because there's all these announcements on, right, you can't do the rent evictions. You have to, this is just in the last week, you'll have to register in order to get rid of your tenant to move in a family member or to renovate, because then they're going to track how many times you do it. And then they're going to do some independent checks to make sure that is your mother-in-law who's moved into your suite, whatever. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. But Sarah was giving me, did you know that in all of these new rules, that the 55 plus, the loosening in the 55 plus community, the new rules include only one person who lives there needs to be over the age of 55.
Oh.
So you could have your 32-year-old girlfriend. Sorry, Amanda, this is just hypothetical.
Wait
but
a
you
minute.
could have your
Where did he
32-year-old
come from?
girlfriend and you and your 2-year-old and your soon to be infant child move into that 55 plus community.
Huh. Interesting.
Now, yeah. She's like, I don't know why everybody's not talking about it. It's an absolute nightmare. There used to be a sort of a 15 to 20% saving on 55 plus community purchases
Right.
because they were restrictive.
Yeah.
And because those restrictions have lifted, now it's like, boom, let's go. She's like, this is going to have incredible negative consequences.
These kinds of policies, whether they're stick policies or whether
or
they're,
carrot.
Yeah. you know, these bureaucratic twists of, whatever. How about you just put all your energy into finding a way to build more? Stop
Which
trying
you've been
to do
saying
the stuff that
for
exists.
5 years.
Stop that. It didn't work. They did the whole empty homes tax in Vancouver. How many
Didn't
more?
work.
Is it cheaper for my kid to live in Vancouver now? No, he's
No,
living in a basement suite in Kits for $2,500 a month. I mean, give me a
crazy.
break. They made no difference. All those units that were just sold, and the others, if they're loaded, they're just paying the tax. They don't care. They're loaded. They don't care. Okay, sure, $5,000 a year or whatever. 5%. I don't care. 10, 50,000. Sure. I live offshore. I don't care. So you didn't solve. You spent $30 million a year on a tax that brings in $15 million. It's just like,
it's crazy.
And it doesn't actually.
You know
do
what
the
else is
job.
Crazy? We could sit here and talk about housing the whole time because we're 500 plus episodes into this podcast and.
500.
Or, sorry, 5 years into
Did I fall
200,
asleep for 250
270,
episodes?
right, 260, whatever
250,
it
I think, today, right? 250.
There, is it 250 today?
I think
There
for 250th today, yeah.
So we're safely 5 years, yeah? This
Six
is our
years.
5th year.
In
6 years.
2008, when did we start? 2009?
Yeah, we started
January
before the pandemic.
January 2018.
Crazy times. But we've consistently talked about housing affordability, the crisis, the overdose crisis, the public health emergency, like all of these things are feeling like a broken record, but we keep talking about them because if we stop talking about them, it's just going to continue to be as crappy as it currently is. I'm really worried over these just last 5 years, we'll call it, how much things have changed when it comes to personal safety, witnessing people like openly stealing things, openly committing crimes right in front of our eyes. There used to be a time, and you said this about patios and Granville Entertainment District, I think on our first ever podcast, was like eyeballs on the street, feet on the ground, community looking out for one another. We've lost the plot.
Mm-hmm. If you build buildings that have no, say, entrances, for example, off the street, you have a real problem. And if you, you know, walls and things like that, like my building has retail on the bottom and then it's townhouses. That whole Yale Town, original Yale Town concept was tower, yeah. Point tower, retail and residential open out to the street. So the people are coming in and out, they're walking around. It's great, but then they changed it. They made it, got rid of the that concept. And then they brought in a lot of this stuff that we're talked about earlier. And you see Yale Town decline in real time. You can just see it. I mean, it's only a matter of time. You know, neighborhoods can change really quickly. And people often mock Yale Town as, oh, hoity-toity and all the yuppies and all that stuff. But man, oh man, I, as a resident and owner there, I worry about a neighborhood going into decline very quickly because people start talking like I'm right now, how bad things are. And this is not the way a growing province and city should be going. We should be able to manage this. A great example is the West End, where forever we've had many different kinds of people living there happily. Seniors, poor, rich, you know, new immigrants, kids, families, every ethnic group, you know, the LGBTQ, like endless of different kinds of community living in harmony for the last 60 years in the West End. Why would we want to break that? And then we seem to be doing that everywhere now. We get these, build these communities, and then we break them because we push in stuff and break the quotient out. And it's not about NIMBY. It's about just look at the balance. Look at the balance. And every neighborhood has to have the balance. Everybody's got to share the wealth and the pain.
I used to go down to Yale Town all the time. I used to go down the West End all the time. I used to go downtown all the time. I used to go down, granted, before all of Robson became high-end spaces. Like, I just don't shop in, you know, the highest 1% of fashion outlets. I used to go down there to buy spices. I used to go down there to shop. I used to be able to, what's that?
Robson Strasse.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
We'd go down. My grandma and I would go down there to get her special Senna tea and her chamomile. You know, back in the day when there was not a parking meter, and then there was timed parking, and then there were parking meters, and then there were parking meters that cost a little bit more. And I've recently gone down there and went, oh, look, I got a meter. I'm not going to valet park at Joe Forte's where I'm going for lunch today. Ooh, how special. And I went to the meter and I put in 2 hours, $18.
Really?
For a meter. God. Come on now. Are you serious?
It's one of the boxes, right? The one that are in the box now that you put on?
I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not. And then going down to the West End, I just want to go down Davie Street. Oh, no, it's between hour this and that, so I can't turn there. Okay, I can't turn anywhere. Okay, now I have to go all the way down to Georgia Street and come back up Denman to get to Davie. I'm not going to Davie Street because I can't come down Beach Avenue either. So you know what? Forget it.
We don't want you there.
It used to be a place that you could go to as a resident. It's not like I'm coming in from somewhere and causing a big problem in my plug-in hybrid. I'm just not going anymore because it used to be I can dash downtown in 15 minutes. It's a 45-minute turnaround from Kits.
You park at the old post office, which is now, what is it, an IGA or whatever it is?
Blah, blah, blah.
Lots of parking there. Lots of parking.
Oh, my God. Can we just tuck in? We got no time. We've just talked it all through. Jeez. But there's one thing that happened today.
Oh, yes.
Breaking news, the policing change.
That was what we were going to focus on, actually.
I know. Whoops.
Yeah. Interesting. The province made some changes to the Police Act. Is that, and it just seems it's a really
amendments.
You read the press release to me before, cause I came straight from a meeting and it literally is like a bunch of blah, 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 blah. But the core of it seems to be a punishment to Brenda Locke.
Yes.
We're taking your control away.
Yeah, that's basically the takeaway from it is that the board of any municipality, Surrey, will be able
Vancouver.
To sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not talking to my phone. Sorry. Surrey, not Siri. Go away, Siri.
Right, of course.
Stop it. Mm-hmm. Right now, the mayor is automatically, in any municipality, is automatically the chair of the police board. So Brenda Locke has been blocking everything for Surrey Police Services, even when the provincial government's like, no, we're doing it. So, and she's like, no, I won't. I won't approve the budget. I won't do the thing. So now the province is saying, among a whole bunch of other garbly goop in this press release, basically, we're changing the police act, or yes, the to reflect Ministry of Public Safety and Solicitor General, new legislation paves the way for police reform is what they're calling it.
And it sounds like a potentially elected potential board as well. It sounds like they're heading towards some kind of, like they have in the United States, where they everybody gets elected, not appointed by the mayor and by a bunch of politicians. So
suggested by two special committees over the last 5 years. So we've studied it.
It's always great to get a special committee, to keep doing special committees till you get the answer you want.
Right. That's correct. Cool. Legislation will strengthen oversight of municipal police with several changes, including allowing the police complaint commissioner to call a public hearing earlier in misconduct investigations and providing the police complaint commissioner authority to conduct systemic reviews and investigations into the causes and contributors of police complaints. I do think that's refreshing. That's one thing that they kind of slipped in there, because there's a lot of protection.
Yeah.
Set up.
There's a lot of good stuff in that thing for sure. So it's very convoluted, and there's a few things that you read out, and like, so, you know, we'll hear more about it. But to me, it was like they're hiding the main, bury the lead, as they say in journalism, right? Which was, Brendan Locke, you've been a very naughty mayor. We're going to have to punish you.
You've been put on notice. You're going to be out of the board.
You're off.
But I do believe, and I'm not 100% on this because nothing's 100%, but I do believe if it was put to a vote by the police board in Surrey right now, she would not be elected chair. There's frustration there.
Well, I think Surrey is going to be the main interest for the next provincial election, as I've always predicted. It's where the NDP will potentially win or lose a minority majority government, and potentially could lead to a coalition between the BC United and the Conservative Party to control the province, because that's where it's potentially heading if the polling keeps going the way it's going.
I don't think those two are going to work together.
Well, they might have to if they could combine forces and create their own minority government. But once they're in,
we'll see. You're often right.
Only time will tell. I did that.
Only time will tell.
She hates when people say that. She's like, oh, God, enough.
Okay, bye.
Bye.